Hey, welcome to the Plant Yourself Podcast. I'm your host, Howie Jacobson. Quick reminder that the new book is out. You Can Change Other People, The 4 Steps to Help Your Colleagues, Employees, Even Family Up Their Game. This is a business book, but it's also a personal book. I wrote it from my experience as a coach, helping people change entrenched self-sabotaging behaviors. And I put all my knowledge and all of Peter Bregman, my co-author's knowledge, into a book to help you do the same thing with the people that you care about in your life. So it's available right now. It is for sale wherever books are sold. You know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookstore.org, your local independent bookshop, my personal preference, if you can do that. And I would love for you to get a copy. That is one amazing way to support me, is to help the sales of the book, and to read it and implement it. And if you like, go on Amazon or somewhere and leave a review. All right, so let's get to today's episode. Today, I welcome back to the show my friends Bianca and Michael Alexander. This is their three-peat, and now they're big time, but you can go back into the archives and see that I knew them when. So Bianca and Michael have had a show for a long time called Conscious Living TV. It was self-produced on their website. They made a deal eventually with Amazon Prime, and now they're on PBS, Public Broadcasting. So people, normal, ordinary people who aren't plant-based or necessarily into yoga and retreats and massage and all the cool stuff, ordinary, regular folks are getting a dose of conscious living on their TVs every week. So I binged watch a bunch of episodes from the first season, and I kind of got jealous. Like, boy, that's a heck of a life to travel around, go to Ayurvedic spas in Bali and taste the best vegan pizza in the world in Berlin and go to music and yoga festivals. You know, it's a dirty job, but somebody's got to do it. And I can't think of two better people to engage in this work and bring it to us than Bianca and Michael. And you'll find out why in this conversation. So without further ado, Bianca and Michael Alexander, welcome back to the Plant Yourself Podcast.
Thanks for having us. It's good to be back.
Yeah. So I have immersed myself in your world. You have a TV series on PBS. This is a big deal. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. We are thrilled to bring conscious living to the masses.
Yeah, well, I'm one of them masses. So I've been binging on it. And let's just start with what's the show about?
Well, conscious living for us is really our journey to try to be more mindful humans. And so, you know, on that journey, which has spanned pretty much, you know, from the time that we first got together and got married, we've covered everything from vegan fashion and food. You know, the plant-based diet, as you know, is such a huge way that we can be more mindful just vibrationally, as well as, you know, minimizing our carbon footprint. We travel the globe covering adventures from yoga retreats in the Himalayas to, you know, some of the best eats from Bali to Berlin. And, you know, along the way, we try to be as mindful as we can while, you know, turning the camera to those who seem to be masters at that journey that have taught us as well. So that's really what the show is about. Everything mindful and, you know, the journey to try to live up to that, which is often where the work really begins.
Yeah, I'd say it's, you know, in it's us doing our assembling best to be conscious. Oftentimes, we're two of the least conscious people we know. As our last shoot would attest, at least for me. And, you know, but inside of that, you know, conscious living is really about how do we be better humans? And what does that look like? The good, the bad, the ugly. And so that's really what conscious living has been for us and what is for us.
What did you mean by that last shoot?
Every shoot. Yes. Really this journey has been for me, there's been a lot of pain, you know, producing the show for 15 years independently. And I struggle in many instances, particularly inside of work, because there's all these like ideas of who I need to be and what I need to be. And, you know, patriarchy and entitlement and, you know, all these things that have me believe that I should be a certain way or I should be acting a certain way. And I really struggle, you know, as the main director of photography for the show in many instances is like, you know, I struggle with, you know, am I good enough? Should I be the one doing this? Or is there somebody better to do this? Mm. And a lot of times it really, you know, I really struggle with that. And it makes it difficult for me to sort of be present and be conscious. And I think, you know, that's kind of an aspect of what conscious living is like, okay, you know, it's one thing to be mindful on the mat or in the meditation, but it's another thing to really sort of, you know, be mindful in the battlefield of life. You know, this is really what it's like when you have kids or you have work or you have businesses, like, how can we maintain and evolve while we struggle through it? And we just heard a quote from Paramahansa Yogananda, and he said, a saint is a sinner who never gave up. And, you know, he didn't believe that people necessarily were sinners, but just as sort of like a meme, it's the idea that, you know, we all stumble, but we just got to keep getting up and doing our best and sort of lead the rest to the divine and sort of let the outcomes and our attachment to the outcomes and attachment to what things look like sort of rest at the feet of the divine and the universe. So anyway, so that's what I, that's what last, the last shoot that we just wrapped yesterday was like for me.
Well, there's enough to unpack in what you guys both have just said to talk about nothing else. But I want to see if we can hit all those points in the context of the show itself. Now, you say you've been at this for 15 years. We met 2014, so seven and a half years ago. Was there anything different now that you're on PBS? Do you have more resources, or are you thinking about your audience differently, or is it just, you know, same deal and we just upload it to a different website now?
I'd say a combination of both. And we must say, just where we met 2014, pretty auspicious meeting on the ocean on a cruise, on the vegan cruise, the Holistic Holiday at Sea, which I haven't been back since. I would love to go back and film a story on that again, but it was amazing, just like a buffet of the best vegan food three times a day. And then we met you there. So pretty auspicious. But yeah, I mean, at that time, we were, you know, still doing in many respects what we're doing now, which is just trying to be the change we want to see in the world and then bring that to the world. I mean, obviously, our platforms have evolved quite a bit since then. You know, we're now on Amazon Prime, three seasons, and then our latest season, and then coming up, we're greenlit for another follow-up season on PBS, which will be airing in 2022. So yeah, our distribution, our reach has grown exponentially. I think the messages and the spirit of where we're coming from, which is really just being transparent, you know, transparent and authentic as to what our journey is. And you know, we have gotten more feedback from viewers requesting to see more of what our journey is, you know, because we're so, I think maybe humbly thinking that the people that have the answers are the people that we're filming, like, okay, we're filming, you know, these great, you know, mindful Buddhist monks, and we're filming, you know, talented organic gardeners, and we're filming, you know, ethical designers around the world, because they seem to have, you know, answers that we're all looking for. But what some of the fans and our distributors have requested is, we want to see more of your journey. And like, why did you choose to be in this destination? And, you know, what is your journey to get to this point? And what are you feeling? And so, you know, we're turning the camera more on ourselves. So that is something that is definitely different, and definitely, you know, and I think it's a reflection of, as Michael was saying, you know, that willingness as we evolve and grow, you know, spiritually and as producers, to be more introspective about like what's motivating what we're doing, and not just what we're doing in the final product and how many viewers and how many sponsors, et cetera, but like who we're being inside of that journey, who we're being on the shoots when we're telling a story about a great mindful resort in Los Angeles. Like, are we being mindful as we're telling that story? And, you know, that has been, I think, much more enriching for us recently than maybe the previous seasons. So we're growing along with the show and along with our viewers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's one of the notes that I took was sort of, you know, if this is the first time people are seeing the show, that you guys are a little bit of blank slates.
Yeah.
Right. And so the question was like, are there plans to reveal more of yourselves?
Absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, there is always that balance of, you know, saying, well, it's not about us and like, oh, look at me, I have a show. Who cares? Right. It's like, what we care about is the fact that we all hurt. We're all looking for answers. We all want to feel a connection to, you know, a higher power. We all want to be loved. We all want to be seen. And we want to feel connected. And so I feel like those universal traits and characteristics is what we feel. And by sharing more of that and sharing more of our struggles inside of that, right? Yeah. You know, inside of this planet. And we've got, you know, it's a lot of potentially scary things happening, from a pandemic to global warming, and the animals are hurting and people are hurting. And we've got, you know, different races fighting each other and the gender wars and all these other things that are happening and unfolding. You know, I think it's just a great backdrop, you know, or canvas to see how we can think more mindfully and can we be better? Can we do better? And really it's not even about like, you know, some sort of platitude to reach, but more about the journey. What does the journey of introspection and living mindfully look like? It isn't always pretty. And I think showing our viewers what that's like for us, which I think has been fun for us, because it's like, well, we're going to be authentic anyway. So it's like, you know, it makes it easier because we're just being ourselves. But I think it also helps people to not feel, you know, a lot of times it's like, particularly in the vegan movement, there's so much pressure to like be perfect. And like the angry vegan is kind of like a meme, right? And so it's like, okay, no judgment, just opening up, you know, our hearts and opening up, you know, turning on the camera and saying, this is what we're going through right now. And how many people can relate? Like everybody. So it's been very freeing, I think for us to do that. And we hope to do more of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, I think also given the nature of the pandemic and really the nature of the show itself as a travel series, you know, inherently in travel, there's like this process of discovery. And when you get out of your, you know, your comfort zone, you're really forced to, you know, be in a different situation. In like our comfort zone, we can hide in our comfort zones, we can hide in our routines, we can hide, and we're really not necessarily forced with things that require us to introspect or to look within. And I think that's a big aspect of just the process of journeying for us. And also, you know, as Bianca said, we are, our relationship just happens to be at this intersection of so many different elements of what the world is dealing with right now, from race to gender to, you know, roles within a household to, you know, to patriarchy and what's justice and what's not justice. And so, you know, if you take those things inside of just our reality and then, you know, in our relationship, and then you sort of put them against the backdrop of this really, interesting place that we've never been before. You know, there's been some really interesting experiences that we've had in Asia, just on the race tip that have been really, really fascinating.
Hmm. So, I mean, let's like talk about the show, just the, you know, the nuts and bolts a little bit, just so people who haven't watched it, have some background. And then I'd love to get into some of these issues. So the first one, you do all things vegan and eco and ethical in Berlin. And then you're in Bali and Hawaii and resorts and retreats and meditations and massages and India and the Ganges River. So what, like when you sit down to plan a season, is it like, gee, where do we want to go? Is it like spin the globe and throw a dart? Is it like, how do you like... What do you want the you know, the arc of the experience to be for yourselves and for viewers?
Yeah, I mean, I think the experience that we're looking for ourselves is the same one for the viewers. We want to be challenged and, you know, sort of have our eyes and our imagination and our hearts, you know, burst wide open with things we haven't experienced before. So obviously healing and spirituality and sustainability and vegan food is an essential just cornerstone of every single episode we produce, because that's a cornerstone of our lives. So, you know, when we travel, whether it's, you know, here in Palm Springs, LA or Indonesia, we're always looking for, you know, great yoga, great meditation, a beautiful, hopefully sustainable accommodations and, you know, a journey into wellness and our own psyches and the local culture that will, you know, hopefully wake us up to a different part of ourselves that we haven't experienced, or remind us of parts of ourselves that, you know, were kind of latent in our overly Western material kind of lifestyle and culture. So I think the spirit of what drives us is that. And then a lot of times, you know, similar to when we first got married, neither one of us had been to Asia ever, you know, and I'd lived in Europe and he traveled, both of us have been around the world, but never Asia. So we said, okay, let's go to Asia. You know, so literally a lot of it is just the spontaneity of let's go somewhere we've never been before, just so that we can discover something new about ourselves and discover what it's like to sort of plant ourselves in a new environment, and you know, the adventures and the humor and the excitement pretty much unfolds from there. So there's really no linear process. It's very organic.
And also, you know, inside of that, like for example, the Berlin episode, which is the first one on this season, you know, it came from us saying, okay, we went to Berlin under the auspices of speaking at a healing hotel conference. And so inside of that, it was like, okay, we're here in Berlin. It's a really cool city. We want to eat really well. Where do we go? And, you know, and so we went to a restaurant and then discovered another restaurant. And there
using the Happy Cow app, let me say that yes, was like a yes, key. Uh-huh. That's like a compass for anywhere we go. And it actually is kind of like, you know, a catalyst for some really cool adventures, places we'd never see or visit, but for where the app is telling us.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And then, you know, and then we went to, you know, fashion and ethical fashion and workers' rights is really important to us. And there was a meetup for the Berlin, you know, branch, the German branch of this organization that we've been a part of. And they were hosting a fashion flash mob runway show in front of this fast fashion, you know, retailer. And so we went there. And
it was to celebrate Fashion Revolution Day, which is a big day celebrating, you know, the spirit of the workers who are making our clothes and finding out, asking the question, who made our clothes, which many people never ask. And so we've been a part of Fashion Revolution for years, and just so happened that this meetup was happening in Berlin while we're there. We had no idea. And then this big fashion show where they're basically protesting, you know, the big box, you know, retailers that are, you know, forcing mostly women and people of color to labor under just inhumane working conditions so that we can, you know, buy a t-shirt for $5. So it's just like all these things that were connected to who we are. I just feel like the path of conscious living is just like being authentic and letting your heart sort of drive you to whatever is next, right? And not having sort of a linear, we've got to go here and agenda. And it can be easy to be like that when you travel, but just being open, and then the serendipitous kind of connections that happen are things you couldn't have planned. Like, had we planned that Berlin episode, there's no way it would not have come out the way that it did, but it just sort of organically sort of documented every aspect of what we look for when we travel. And we try to do that every episode. We never know what it's going to be. You know, it's like oftentimes until we get there and the cameras start rolling and other things emerge. So it's like the universe comes through the camera and through the journey, and we're just along for the ride.
Yes. And sometimes our stomach, drives us as well.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's clear from some of the loving videography of the meals.
Yeah. Love food. Love to shoot. Yeah.
So let me ask you something, because you guys are documentarians too, yeah, you know, and you talk about being authentic. So I'm just wondering, like, there's nobody else with you, right? You don't have a crew. You don't have someone holding a boom mic. You don't have other a crew going around with you. It's just the two of you. Is that right?
Sometimes we have a crew, but most time, particularly for international destinations, just given a budget, you know, we're a very low budget show, independently produced, independently funded for the most part. Yeah. Like, we're traveling as light as we possibly can. And for us, you know, it's been interesting because it's forced us to like turn the camera on ourselves. So in most of the shoots you're seeing, it's each of us filming one another, which is like amazingly worked out and taken us as far as PBS, which is kind of hard to believe in Amazon Prime. It's like, guess that's all we needed to do. It's like, we weren't either one of us trained as professionals in filmmaking. You know, we just taught ourselves because we wanted to document our journeys around the world. In fact, this last season that you see on PBS, like, we weren't necessarily planning on producing a season when we traveled. We were just like, okay, we're in Indonesia, we're in Bali, we're in India. Well, we got to at least document where we've been and what we're doing. And it turned into this amazing sort of culture. Gotcha. So it just, you know, is part of, I think, the blessing of kind of like ignorance, right? It's like, we don't know what we don't know. We're just turning on the camera and seeing where it ends up. And it's gotten this far, which is really just an amazing blessing.
Yeah. So my question is around being authentic. So if it was just you guys, and so, you both went to that, the karma, I can't remember the karma thing in Bali that is you did a 7 or 14 day detox retreat.
The Panchakarma. Yes.
Panchakarma. Right. Yeah. And so there's very intimate moments of you sort of, detoxing, suffering, releasing. And I'm imagining if you guys were just going through it and there was a film crew on you, you guys could focus on yourselves, but you're also, while you're going through it, you're producing the show of yourselves going through it. There's also moments when you did your Mexican fiesta meal, where you can see there's a shot of the guests walking up to your house and you welcoming them. And clearly that was staged and someone's following them to do it. You're using fictional techniques to tell a true story. And I'm wondering how you navigate. Is that something that you consider, or is just here's how documentarians do it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that there's a way that documentarians do it. I think for us, it's very much, as Bianca mentioned, and it's, you have some really good points. It is, there's always a consideration of how much of what we're sharing is sort of fit for public consumption, right? Yeah. And so we want to make sure that we're mindful about that there's a larger story being told here. And the story is about, whether in that instance, that story was about the Panchakarma detox. And so we're going through a journey of it. And so we try to share intimately what it's like for us. But then at the same time, I also do think it gives us an advantage to be able to take a step back and not sort of get overly consumed with our own stuff. And so there's an opportunity to step back and say, okay, now what is this story? And put on our producer hats or put on our executive producer hats and say, okay, now what is it? Where are we going with this story? Rather than just we're in it and we're just sort of in it. And that's, that's an aspect of reality TV that I know that people like. But there's also, what's so funny about reality TV, at least in the industry, is that very little of it is actually real. It's highly produced. It's highly, staged. There was a gentleman yesterday I met who was in one of the big Bravo reality shows. And he was saying, there was nothing real about it. They did the same thing. And they said, you're going to say this, this, and this. So, from our standpoint, we try to really sort of share that authentic journey and also be mindful of those other people here. And we want to honor them as well, that it's not just a party of two, it's a party of three or 3 million. Yeah.
And let me add to that, the shoot where you said that we were being, we staged the walking in. We actually had a crew for that, a big crew on that particular the Cinco de Mayo episode. We were in a house in Long Island and near the Hamptons, and we had a crew, and there was this whole sort of journey of being in this sustainable house and having a sustainable Cinco de Mayo summer spring festival experience. But even in situations like that, because we're the executive producers of the show, we direct the spirit and the tone and the flavor and the flow of the show. It is really important for us, at every moment, being authentic and sort of sharing, okay, this is where we're at. We're also doing that and thinking, okay, well, how can this be beneficial for someone else? Can this piece of the journey where, we're struggling in our detox and the Panchakarma in Bali, which is a traditional Ayurvedic detox using the tradition of 5,000 years of medicine, where health is really a function of a balance between spirituality, your emotional well-being, your psychological well-being, and your physical well-being, which is very different, from sort of the allopathic Western sort of concept of what it means to be healthy. So in the Panchakarma, we were forced to really, dive deep into all of those layers. And, we felt that would be beneficial to people watching. And that's why we showed. I mean, because obviously in post-production, we have the power to edit and to cut out anything we want to cut out and to, you know, show what we want to show. But, you know, we try to be very intentional about sharing those parts of ourselves authentically that are not necessarily the prettiest parts, you know, that are not necessarily the ones that, you know, cast us in the best light, because that's not what conscious living is about. It's about being present to wherever you are on the journey. And some days you're more conscious and other days you're not. And, you know, the journey of being mindful requires, you know, diving into those dark, shadowy places and bringing light to them. And so we want to make that process more accessible and more, I think, less stigmatized versus, oh, I'm a yogi, I'm vegan and everything's perfect and I've got it all figured out. And I know exactly where I'm going on my entire itinerary and my life is perfect. It's like, completely not true, right? For anyone, right? And so making sort of the journey of dealing with the ugliness and the messiness much more visible, I think for us is like a key part of, you know, our storytelling process.
So you go to a lot of, you know, what I would consider sort of exotic locations and you have, you know, some really off the beaten track experiences. I'm wondering, how do you want to connect that to your audience? Do you see like a lot of people who watch thinking like, oh, I'm going to go to do that retreat in Bali? Or can we, you know, can we sort of model you in our own regular lives? Because, you know, I like as I was watching episode after episode, I was feeling both like really inspired and also frankly jealous.
A lot of people say that. I mean, it's like there's so many places we want to go and so many people doing amazing things that we're jealous of all the time. And sometimes that inspires us to like go and like, you know, cross that thing off your bucket list. And I know that it's not necessarily particularly for anyone, you know, the most accessible to jump on a plane and travel across the world. Not everybody can do that. And there's times where we weren't able to do that. And I think, you know, we hope to allow our viewers to live through us. So when we're going to the Tirtha Impul temple to get, you know, the water healing and the water blessing, we hope that our viewers feel that they too are getting a blessing. And we try to put ourselves in the place of the viewers. So it's like, okay, you may not be able to go and do this, but you can do it through me or you can do it through Michael. And a lot of the sort of medical, like holistic treatments that we do that we're both guinea pigs for, it's the same thing, things that many people won't try, but it's like, okay, I'll be your guinea pig and you can sort of live it through us. And that's the hope, that the experience translates and it's universal, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter, you know, where you go, it's where you're at, you know? So it's like, what are you bringing to those places? And that's something that I think everybody can identify with, you know, wherever they are.
And I think also, you know, a lot of times we hear from viewers and they're, you know, things that they may have seen years ago, on the show, they end up sort of fulfilling several years later or a few years later. And what we find is that a lot of times that we're just dropping seeds of possibility in people and saying, hey, this kind of experience is possible. You could go to this incredibly beautiful place in Bali and you could have a detox, or it's possible to, you know, to go vegan for 10 days and go through what you're going through and, you know, sit on the toilet for what seems like entirely too long. But you can come out on the other side of it and you can feel better and you can feel lighter. And so that's, I think, a big piece of what we're trying to do is say, hey, you know, there is a world of possibility out there. And I think particularly in these times where we're so divisive and we're dividing it at these, not just racial divides, but now political divides. Now families within families are not speaking to each other because of who you voted for once every 4 years. And it's like, you know, part of what we're trying to do is to bring, you know, to bring our humanity and bring us together as a human species and say, hey, listen, we're all part of this same family. We're all human and we're all going through it. And so if we can begin to focus on that and celebrate that, celebrate the diversity, celebrate. And I find myself practicing, and it's not always easy when I find out people's certain political beliefs, can I sort of get in their world and be curious as to what they're believing rather than immediately, you know, sort of jumping to judgment. And so I think that's part of the aspect of the show that we're trying to do is to say, hey, let's celebrate our diversity and let's get curious inside of it.
And I think one of the best ways to embrace that journey is by putting yourself and immersing yourself in a foreign environment, you know? And so traveling to international destinations around the world for us is kind of a way for viewers to say, hey, look, they just plop themselves in the middle of nowhere and they're working through it. And maybe, you know, that can be a model for how to, you know, reach out and say hi to the neighbor that lives right next to you that you've never said hello to, right? I mean, it's a similar meme of, you know, getting outside of your comfort zone and being the change you want to see in the world.
So one of the interesting things about the timing for this is I've just come off watching half of the season of the, I think it's the HBO show White Lotus. Are you guys familiar with it?
Yes, yeah. I've watched just a few episodes. It's fun.
It's fun. And it's also like a really difficult show, right? Because there's, you know, and like I kept on seeing sort of like comparisons and parallels to especially like your stay in Bali and like what?
Like how so?
Well, so, I mean, the HBO show is kind of is looking at all these people and looking for their flaws. Right. And you guys are going and looking for the beauty, but a lot of the language is the same. Like when people are talking about like expressing my energy and vibration, true. Like a lot of the really, really clueless people on White Lotus are using that language. And we know that there is a way in which this kind of spirituality is co-opted by capitalism. It's co-opted by narcissism, by egotism, and it's been co-opted quite a lot by sexual predation. And I'm wondering how you guys go about, you know, sort of either vetting or like keeping a foot in both worlds of like, because it's, you know, there's a lot of good people who've been taken in by gurus, and there's a lot of good people who have been helped deeply by gurus. And I'm wondering how you sort of navigate all that.
Well, can I just quickly say, because I know you probably have a lot you want to say, and he's looking at me like, are you going to let me talk? This is what's constantly happening when you're
we've never said that before.
Alpha director. Executive.
You heard it here first, folks.
Journey to Conscious Living starts in your marriage. Trust me. I just want to say really quickly, one of the things for us, I think, is, you know, to avoid the spiritual bypassing is just being willing to, you know, we're not here to tell anyone else who they need to be or how they need to be spiritual or how they need to be mindful or what that journey needs to look like. So it's like, for us, it's like all we're doing is sharing what our journey looks like. You know, there's no platitudes. There's no perfect way to be. There's no perfect way to be vegan. There's no perfect way to be an environmentalist. There's no perfect way to be a Democrat or Republican. And I think that sort of frees us from kind of the binary right, wrong paradigm, which locks so many of us into debate. So from that perspective, it's like, hey, if New Age is your thing, go for it. Hinduism, Judaism, whatever it is, you know, so that frees us to say, this is just what we're doing. We're not saying you need a guru, but our guru has, you know, illuminated our life and kept us together and brought us blessings beyond anything we could have possibly imagined. That's just our story. Yours may be something different.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. And I think, you know, also just to that end is like, how do we create a better world? I mean, fundamentally, that's our commitment. And for us, we believe that creating a better world looks like love. And it looks like focusing on the positive and focusing on the beauty. And inside of that, it certainly does not mean that you allow for, you know, injustices. A big piece of the show, and certainly this next season that will be airing next year, we're looking at, you know, injustices. We're spending a fair amount of time and telling quite a few stories about, you know, social justice. And so for us, but I think at the end of the day, you know, we can look at each other's flaws. And part of us, you know, sharing how we share our stories is to say, look, we're really flawed. Like I'm so unconscious and appalled at my own behavior sometimes. And this is after, you know, 20 years of meditation and I've gotten a lot better. And I, you know, and it's like, I'm not,
you should have seen this before. I mean,
right. It's like, you know, it's ugly. And yet it is humanity.
Yeah.
It is our humanity. And so part of what we're trying to accomplish through the show is to celebrate our humanity and really look at the light that is within all of us, regardless of you know, some, sure, some are choosing to express themselves in very negative manners, but and there are consequences, and there is karma for them, but there is also the divine. There's also light in every single human being. And so regardless of how they're choosing to express themselves in this lifetime, and, you know, one of the stories that we were really deeply humbled to tell, that's part of episode 13, which I think you saw, was about this bhakti yoga organization that went into prisons. And I was so profoundly humbled to be with men that, you know, admittedly had killed, you know, one guy was spending life in prison for killing his best friend who was sleeping with his wife. And to be with him and to be with these men that have had these profound, made these profound mistakes, and yet to be with them inside of this place where they, some of them, not all of them, but some of them are freer spiritually and emotionally than just about any person I've ever met on the outside world. That's so humbling.
In captivity, they're reaching enlightenment.
Right.
I mean, we'll never see the light of day that we do.
Right.
And we're so less enlightened and so less conscious, yeah, you know, than people that are incarcerated.
Yeah.
So humbling.
Right. Right. And so, so inside of that, there is a responsibility that they have taken for themselves and for their actions, but there's also an innate acceptance that they too still, despite that, are valuable, loved human beings that are having a human experience. And that deserves to be honored and deserves to be respected. And we can actually learn from them inside of that.
Yeah, that was a really powerful segment. And, you know, also what I found powerful were the words of the volunteers from Bhakti who went in there. This one woman saying, like, I didn't want to do this, but my guru said, be generous. And, you know, saying like, these are fully human beings, as full as anybody else. And, you know, you can, you know, I can sort of do a check of my own assumptions of, oh, someone's in prison. Like somehow I get to minimize their importance.
Yeah.
And their humanity. Yeah. I mean, it was just like, it's just humbling. And you see that for them, the illumination that they are able to achieve is a function of devotion and love and their meditation practice and their yoga practice. And it's like, wow, like, you know, with practice, you know, perfection is possible. It's definitely is inspiring. And it's in that confined situation, they really have nothing else to do. So it's like, okay, if you really dedicate yourself, you can liberate yourself, right? That part of it is really, really inspiring. But I do appreciate you, Howard, just acknowledging, you know, the cultural expropriation and, you know, the sexual predation and all the things that we're seeing sort of in what I call the movement of spiritual bypassing, which is, I think, a stage on sort of the stages to enlightenment, to kind of objectify spirituality and to commercialize it as something out there before we can bring it in and embody it and incorporate it as something in here. And I think that's the first step. So it's like, you know, we're all on different stages of the continuum. And, you know, eventually that step will lead to, you know, a deeper understanding, interest and appreciation. And so we embrace that too. But we do have to check ourselves and make sure, am I like taking something from this culture that I'm not giving back to? Am I, you know, honoring the land? And that's something that everywhere we go, we do ceremonies with the land, with the indigenous, honoring with gratitude the earth and honoring the people that walked on that land before we got there, which is something that not a lot of places and practices do. And that's something we do at every place we go, you know, whether the cameras are rolling or not. It's part of our own rituals to connect ourselves to, you know, that which is greater than us, that's allowing us to be here. And that kind of helps us to kind of align with the energy and, you know, allows for things to move more smoothly and also humbles us to be open to guidance from those who have much more wisdom than we do, you know, so that keeps us, I think, in check. Yeah, we hope.
Yeah. And that, I mean, that brings up like another of the parallels or, you know, iffy parallels between, in my mind, between White Lotus and what you guys are doing. In that, you know, there's a tension between these ancient indigenous wisdom traditions and tourist capitalism.
Yes,
totally.
Very much so.
Right. Yeah.
I'm wondering like what you guys have seen and experienced and what are the best places? What are the non-White Lotus places doing to respect and honor, you know, without expropriation, without having the natives do their dance on the land you've stolen from their ancestors. Right. Like, what do you see as the best out there?
Well, I mean, you know, part of this whole journey is like we're in America, we're on stolen land. And, right, and it is the very nature of our DNA as Americans to be existing and walking through the world on stolen land. And this is not, Columbus did not steal America. Columbus stole it.
And, he didn't discover it, you mean?
Yeah, yeah, right. He didn't discover it. And so inside of that, there is this, you know, this, we, our entire world is really recovering and beginning to sort of pull ourselves out of the trappings of colonialism. And colonialism is in our mind.
And our hearts.
And it's in our hearts because, you know, I'm a white man and I've walked through this world, you know, in many ways, believing that the world should work for me and believing that it's okay to step on a brown neck, or it's okay to, if I can buy, you know, a $5 shirt, it doesn't matter if a little child created it halfway across the world, because I don't know them. I'm sure they're fine. And it's like, that is the sort of uniquely American dark side of capitalism, of this, you know, post stage or late stage capitalism that we're in. And so, you know, part of what my journey has been, and I think part of what conscious living has been, is being with an indigenous African-American woman whose grandparents and great, great, great grandparents on both sides of her family were slaves. And so I've benefited as a white man from the sort of history of that. And so, you know, as we travel and as our show travels, we are carrying both of those. We're carrying both the lineage of slavery and sort of the worst, if you will, expressions of colonialism. And we're also carrying the privilege of colonialism through me. And so our journey has been, okay, what is your intention? And are you traveling with that? You know, it is attention. It is a tension within our relationship. It's a tension within our travels. There are a lot of false gurus. There's a lot of false prophets around. There's a lot of, you know, spiritual bypassing, and I'm the guru and I have this and I have that. And we've seen plenty in Bali and Thailand and
follow me,
Indonesia,
only cost you $5,000 a week.
Yeah. Right. And you know, and do this and you can share my seed and you'll be enlightened and, you know, all of these horrific things. And so, you know, that's, I think what's so unique about our journey is that we have this inherent tension that really forces us to question ourselves and question our beliefs. And inside of that, as we're traveling into these exotic places, really do so. And this is really where Bianca's, you know, leadership has come in, because it was really a deeper appreciation than I would ever have of the indigenous. And really, is this, you know, is this adventure, is this thing that I'm going on, is it really honoring the you know, honoring the people, and is this about celebrating or is this about exploiting?
And I think a big piece of that is like giving voice to the indigenous themselves. I mean, we don't need another white man telling us what the indigenous are doing or fighting for them. I mean, it's great, but it's like, you know, one of my goals is to really shine a light and let them speak for themselves and to tell their own stories and to tell their own journeys of deconstructing the colonization that has, you know, embodied all of us, you know, so that they have a voice. And that's just, I think, really my passion for justice is a big piece of conscious living. You know, very educated person, but didn't know anything about the planet, about health, about the connection, about who's making my clothes, about, you know, what I can do to minimize my carbon footprint so that future generations, I wouldn't even be there to benefit, to have enough magnanimity in my own heart and enough generosity to care about someone other than myself, people that will be here long after I'm gone. And so I think that's a big piece of just being willing to kind of make ourselves less significant, you know, so that we can be open to wisdom that has been here for millennia, which, you know, we've forgotten. And I think the earth is suffering and humanity is suffering as a result.
So one of the things I've noticed is like when you introduce a venue, there'll be lots of sort of long, slow sort of intro shots. I'm sure there's a name for that in the establishing shots, right? With voiceover, not from either of you, but from a representative of the venue. And so it's, you know, so often like the way I would think this, like the story would be told in a linear fashion is you guys say, and now we are here and this is what it is. And then, but you start with the voice of someone else, very often an indigenous person, or, you know, the Cocopelli flute master, or the, was it Michal, the sacred dancer.
Yeah.
That episode was amazing.
Yeah. They're incredible. It was an amazing experience.
I mean, that was like a real challenge for me to be like, okay, what's my spiritual side and what's my just, you know, horny side?
Like, yeah, I know. It's a lot of guys like that episode. The women are beautiful. I mean, they're stunning and they can dance and they're just connected to their femininity and their sacred sexuality, which is a big piece of it. So thank you for admitting that it's a part of humanity.
Yeah. Right. But like the way that you just sort of set up the story, I wonder, is that sort of a conscious decision to have the first voice we hear introducing the story not be your own?
Yeah, I think, you know, as I was saying, it's important to, you know, allow the indigenous voices, the voices of our elders, the voices of wisdom that are intimately connected with the land to be our guides. Because, you know, on location, they're our guides. We're coming with our cameras from another place, from America, from a Western culture. Yes, I'm African American, but it's like, I'm Western, I'm American, right? And so honoring and giving precedence to those who typically don't have the microphone, who typically don't have the camera in their faces, which we've all seen and heard, you know, to ad nauseum, I think for us is just authentic to how the journey unfolds. We're being guided by people who are allowing us with their grace and hospitality to set foot in their sacred places. And we, with deference, sort of bow our heads and our cameras, you know, and allow them to take us and our viewers on the journey. And I think for us, it feels the most honoring and the most authentic. Of course, we have our experience as well, but it's something that just felt authentic to us. There's no sort of, you know, following documentarian rules. Again, it's like none of us have any training in filmmaking. You know, we're just, you know, we're trained in the ways of the heart and listening to the cues of, you know, our guides. And that's sort of how it's emerged. But, you know, something I hadn't necessarily noticed until you pointed it out.
Yeah. And I, you know, and it's interesting that you say that, Howard, because, you know, I definitely feel that, you know, inside of that storytelling, there is a commitment to get underneath the surface. And, you know, the White Lotus is really about, you know, what happens when you're only focusing on the surface and you have the nomenclature, you know, as Morpheus told Neo in the Matrix, there's a difference between knowing the path and walking the path. Mm-hmm. And I think our society has celebrated knowing the path. Mm. And we are really struggling. And at times it is a struggling, doing our stumbling best to walk the path and to share what it's like to walk the path with our viewers. And, you know, it's not without, you know, I think it's really exciting that we are on PBS, because the fact of the matter is, Howard, is that, you know, there is a really all but non-existent voice of people of color, and particularly women of color, in the lifestyle genre on PBS. It is overwhelmingly white dominated to the point of almost non-existent, other than Bianca, that are both hosting stories and are on camera and behind the camera. And so that for us is really a key consideration inside of our storytelling, is that many of these people have never seen an interracial couple on camera that are watching our show. And many of them are, you know, this is all new to them. So part of what we're mindful of is that, how can we make it accessible? How can we introduce these concepts to people with love, without judgment, but also in a way that's authentic to the fact that there is his story that we've all been trained, that is about the white narrative and the white colonial narrative.
And the male narrative.
And the male narrative.
His story.
Right? As she reminds me when I talk too much. And that's just me under the table. And then there's truth. And oftentimes those are not the same.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, one of the things I noticed is the first time that sort of in the season that I watched, that you sort of acknowledge that, Bianca, you're a woman of color. Like, you're just, you know, like in Bali, you're just going to these places, like, you are who you are, but it's not sort of explicitly dealt with in the narrative, but the art exhibit in Chicago, where you and this the woman who's Nina, I forget,
Dina Griffin, yeah,
Dina
yeah.
Griffin, who's the architect, like one of like 100 or 250 African American women architects in the world out of like over 100,000, and you're looking, and she's got her name on the cornerstone, and you both are celebrating in a way that made me feel like, okay, so you've sort of come out as an African-American woman, which is kind of a weird thing to say because it's not like you're hiding it, but sort of like as a public persona to say that this is something noteworthy that I understand, and I'm going to bend down and touch this stone so that the audience understands that this is how big a deal I find this.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it was such an honor to be able to just highlight her amazing talent, you know, at, you know, a building of such prestige, right? The Art Institute in Chicago and the Modern Wing, which is a LEED certified design, which she, you know, authored, you know, in conjunction with the main architect of record, Renzo Piano, who's an amazing international architect as well. So, you know, being with her and hearing her story of, you know, being one of the, you know, talented 10th, you know, one of the privileged few that had the education and the opportunities and the access to get the opportunity to be, you know, amongst those who were eligible, you know, was definitely, you know, a huge honor for a person of any race and any gender, but particularly as an African-American woman, you know, where in many ways, you know, sociologically, we're seen as sort of the bottom of the sociological, you know, power structure, you know, in America and in the world, to reach, you know, a level of success and all the obstacles and all the odds and all of the opposition and the microaggressions and the sort of, you know, suppression and male domination and white domination that I have personally experienced, you know, at every single step that I've gotten to. And a lot of that, it's not conscious, you know, it's not conscious on their part, but it's very conscious. And we're very aware of the impact of what it means to be a woman of color in America who's successful. It triggers a lot for people. You know, it triggers sort of like, aren't you supposed to be here versus there? And it's subconscious. And so you're battling other people's demons that they're not even aware that they have. So yes, you know, a woman, an African-American woman in America, in a Chicago, in a place where, you know, just generations before, you know, her people and my people were considered chattel or property or slaves of another race because of nothing other than our skin color. Her name engraved on that cornerstone is a major milestone, not just for her, but for me and for all the ancestors who could never experience that type of success, who could never even be in the same room with a white person or even enter the building itself because of segregation. So absolutely, it was you know, something that I think we need to see more and more of, and we're hoping to highlight that. And we're going to be doing a lot more stories about social justice and reparations in our next season of PBS.
Yeah, not only success, but selflessness and generosity, right? Like, because we see, like, I see stories of, like, you know, okay, so now there's like, oh, a black billionaire, part of me is like, you know, good for that person, and part of me is like, oh, they've like,
they're a billionaire,
they're as bad as us now, you know, like,
yeah.
But to see success in terms of, you know, of healing the world, I don't know if there's a way that I can say this doesn't make me into some kind of an asshole, but to say, like, you know, like when I see, you know, just in terms of feminism, when I see women succeeding as well as men, that doesn't excite me as much as women succeeding and bringing women's qualities that have been lacking. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about, you know, great, you're the CEO, or great, your net worth is $1 billion, but you haven't sacrificed your essence in order to do it. And it seems, you know, like we need to lift up people as themselves and not just say, okay, we're going to let a 10th of you succeed on our terms.
Yeah, no, at 100%. And that's something that, you know, I think many of us want to see. And yes, you know, Dina's work as bringing more sustainability to the planet, right, is a huge thing, and just being an example of how beautiful and amazing sustainability can be, you know, at the highest level. And this amazing art gallery with the Picassos and the Rembrandts, et cetera, is just like, okay, that can be done. But I agree with you. It's like, it's something that I've often, you know, battled with and struggled with. And Michael and I have had many conversations of like, it's okay for you to be here as long as you, you know, aren't too dark. It's okay to be married to a white man as long as you're not too dark, and you could be maybe multiracial, and your hair is straight, not too kinky, not too African. And, you know, we don't want to like intimidate the sort of pecking order and require white people to have to like look within and say, wait a minute, what is it about seeing a black man, a black woman walking down the street with a white man holding hands that's so triggering? It's like, and it's okay if you kind of have your head down and like your tail slumped and you're kind of like, you know, but to walk as proud and spiritual and happy and in love, it's just kind of like, wait, who do you think you are? You know? And so we get a lot of that. And I think, you know, there's a reason why many of us feel that we have to kind of minimize our greatness, minimize our light, because it can be very interpolating to the sort of power structure and the powers that be. So, you know, I think, you know, seeing commercials now where you have African-American women with big afros and, you know, it's okay to wear braids. We don't have to relax our hair anymore. I mean, there's so many parts of our identity now that are more embraced, I think, in many respects, you know, thanks to, you know, the martyrs, you know, of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and, you know, Ahmaud Arbery, all those who have sacrificed, and many others that remain unnamed. And the Black Lives Matter movement has brought a lot more awareness to this. And it's like, in the past year, I've seen more people of color on mainstream TV and not on the Black channel, you know, that are able to be in their Blackness, and Black people bank and Black people go on vacation and all the things I've known for years, but you never saw it in TV and commercials. I think it's a really good point, Howard, that we need to see more of that, I think, in television, so that there's more of an awareness that like we exist, and it's okay and it's good, and it makes the world a more colorful and interesting place.
Mm-hmm. Amen. I'd like to talk to you guys for several more hours, but I want to honor our time agreement. Tell us the second season, when is that gonna come out?
Next season airs next year, 2022, in the late summer, early fall.
Okay, so there's plenty to watch now. There's the 13 episodes on PBS, and then there's three seasons on Amazon Prime. And also, if people want to get like the full archive and all the background and recipes and Vegan Man, your old incarnations. Where can they go to find you?
They can go to consciousliving.tv.com, and they can find, as you said, thousands of stories and recipes. And then, of course, follow us on social media, on Instagram at Conscious Living TV, and Facebook and Twitter at Conscious TV.
Send us a message. We reply. We talk to our fans all the time. I've met some of the most amazing people, and some that have been featured on our show on Instagram, actually. So I love social media. Keeps us connected. Ooh.
Excellent. Well, it's again such a pleasure to connect with you guys. Haven't seen you in too long.
I know.
Maybe another vegan cruise. Is there another one happening this year, you think?
I don't know. I want to go on one of these spiritual retreats.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
I'm a little scared of buffets right now. I need
I need
something a little more ascetic.
Yeah, I hear that.
Buffets and cruises is a little scary.
Combined, it's a little dangerous.
All right, we'll walk a labyrinth together.
Yes, we'd love that. Anytime.
So good to connect with you, Howard, and just love what you're doing and love Plant Yourself, and just have to commend you for just sharing so many stories and so much light with the world, and just really grateful and honored to be here again and to be part of your world and your universe.
Yeah, I think this is what, the third time we've been on the show, maybe?
I think so. Third or fourth.
I like it. Third or fourth, I think. You're right.
Well, you know, I'm realizing, I was talking to you guys, that I need to, it's like you were talking about, like, you know, I do detox four times a year. I think I need conscious living conversations at least four times a year, because I can get pretty down.
Yeah, we all can. Yeah.
And you guys can help. You guys lift me up, because you don't deny the downness.
Oh, no, it's a key part of the journey. Sometimes it feels like it's more down than up.
Yeah.
That is the journey.
So this is definitely, you know, balm for my soul. So
good. Yeah, it's good. Wonderful.
And of course, if you want a detox, you can also check out our 10-day conscious living detox on Amazon. We have a new book on Amazon that's available for people as well. So we can keep it going.
Okay. I'll put a link to that in the show notes. And maybe we get to get together in a month or so and talk about that book.
That would be great.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks so much. Love you guys.
You love you too.
Love you, Howard.
Love
Thank
to
you.
Everybody.
Bye. All right. The show notes for today's episode are at plantyourself.com/489. 489, only 11 away from that magic number 500. If you got any ideas for who you'd like me to get as a guest for that special show, let me know. Otherwise, I'll just keep them coming the way I have been, not really paying attention to stuff like that. But 500 is kind of a milestone. All right. So in garden news, we are engaged in a holding action against the Bermuda grass. I have wood chipped the main path and kind of ran out of steam a little bit with the clearing beds. So we're going to let winter do that for us. Some of the beds are just overgrown with weeds, and that's how they will overwinter. And then we'll mulch them all down to cover crop in the spring and then plant something nice. We also have a ton of greens, kale, broccoli greens that came up in some beds that we really overseeded. It's just beautiful to see all of them jostling for space, and they're finding their way into our cooking. Also got the very last of the cherry tomatoes, and so the summer garden is now officially to bed. In movement news, I've been a little under the weather the last few days. I worked hard on Saturday and did a workout on Monday. I'm taking it easy because, of course, we have the Ultimate World Championships in Sarasota, Florida this coming weekend. So I'm just resting up in preparation for that. All right, time for thanks. Thanks to Will Ridenour for allowing me to use his beautiful song, Sabali Dawn, The Dance of Peace. You can find more of Will's music at his website, willridenour.com. And of course, thanks to all of you Plant Yourself Podcast patrons, Kim Harrison, Lynn McClellan, Rickney Porter, Dominic Maurer, Barbara Whitney, Tammy Black, Amy Good, Amanda Hatherley, Mary Jane Wheeler, Ellen Kennelly, Melissa Cobb, Rachel Behrens, Tina Scharf, Tina Ahern, Jen Filikanovsky, David Bizek, The Mysterious Michelle X, Elsbeth Feldman, Leia Stoller, Alan Christensen, Colleen Peck, Michelle Landry, Josina, Sarah Durkis, Kelly Cameron, Janet Selby, Claire Adams, Tom Franzek, Jeanette Benham, Gil Assert, David Donahue, Blair Cyborg, Dorona Vizov, Gio and Carolyn Argentati, Jody Friesner, Misha Rosen, Michael Warbeck, Aviva Lael, Alicia Lemus, Val Linneman, Nick Harper, Bandana Chali, Molly Levine, The Inscrutable Harry R., Susan Laverty, The Panda Vegan, Craig Kovic, Adam Scharf, Karen Burry, Heather Morgan, Nigel Davies, Marion Blum, Teresa Koppel, Julian Watkins, Breed O'Connell, Sharon Hirschman, Linda Ayad, Holm Hedegaard, Iza Tuzinwa, Connie Hainline, Aaron Greer, Alicia Davis, Heather O'Connor, Carolyn Jensen, Sherry Lakoski of Plant Power for Health, Karen Smith, Scott Marani, Karen and Joe Crabtree, Kirby Burton, Teresa Carell, Kevin McCauley, Elizabeth Rothschild, Ann Jesse, Cheryl Dwyer, Jenny Hazelton, Peter W. Evans, Dennis Bird, Darby Kelly, Lori Fanny, Linnea Lundquist, Emily Iconelli, Levy Wallach, Rosamund McAtee, Dan Picorni, Stephen Leenan, Patty V. Martino, Mike and Donna Kartz, Deanne Bishop, Bilberry Elf, Marjorie Lewis, Trisha Adams, Nancy Sheldon, Lindsay Bayshore, Gunmarit Hagen, Tracy Gullidge, Laura Heaton, Meg from Mama Says, Stacey Stokes, Ben Savage, Michael Kay, David Hughes, Connie Rogers, Claire England, Sally Robertson, Paranganchi, Amy Daly, Brian Tourville, Mark Jeffrey Johnson, Josie Dempsey, Karen Schmidt, Pamela Hayden, Emily Perryman, Allison Corbett, Richard Stone, Lauren Vaught of Edible Musings, Aaron Hasty, Sean Owen, Sagar Nayak, Erica Piedra, Danielle Roberts, Michael Lushton, Sarah Johnson, Catherine Floyd, for your generous support of the podcast. That's it for now. As always, be well, my friends.